Richard Aslan. For the past 33 years until this past summer, I was on the faculty at the University of Rochester. I had been a department chair, dean of arts and sciences, and vice provost for arts, sciences, and engineering. From the moment in March of 2016 when I filed a complaint with the U of R office, I was continually surprised by the unwillingness of the systems in place to hold our faculty to standards of common decency, regardless of any legal technicalities. The Debevoise-Plimpton report criticizes us, and me in particular, for taking matters into our own hands. Yet the report admits that the U of R investigation was incomplete, and in fact had hidden one inappropriate sexual relationship that involved Florian Jaeger from their initial report. And just today, we learned that there was yet another sexual relationship with an undergraduate that we did not know about, in addition to Jaeger's admitted sexual relationships with two graduate students. And the report confirms many other inappropriate behaviors that contribute to an unwelcome workplace for our students. This is why the complainants, and myself in particular, pushed the university to reevaluate the case. And when our appeal was denied, why we met in person with President Seligman. He promised that he would evaluate the entire matter, including our concern about the structure of the university's legal office, and he never did. In fact, we went back and looked at how many times we tried to get the university to do the right thing, all of which were done in private, and the count was 29 times. The report also benchmarked current U of R policies and procedures, noting that they are in need of some serious revisions. We could not agree more. And in fact, in November of 2016, I personally outlined for President Seligman and Dean Lenny a new set of policies and procedures that are almost identical to what the Debevoise-Plimpton report recommends today. Why then did it take a public disclosure to motivate the university to take any action? And why is that action still a promissory note with changes not yet enacted? Despite the conclusion of the Debevoise-Plimpton report that the university followed its guidelines and violated no laws, we could not disagree more. The announcement just an hour ago that President Seligman has resigned, effective next month, is a confirmation that our actions were justified. We take no satisfaction in the disruption that this case has triggered, but that disruption was a result not just of one faculty member's behaviors, but rather a systemic bias that puts students at risk. We are proud of all those victims who have come forward at considerable risk to their reputations, and we are encouraged that our complaint has caused many other universities to have examined their policies and procedures on sexual misconduct. And more importantly, we are hopeful that attitudes have undergone a sea change so that academia can join other industries who have taken firm and prompt action in these matters. There is no question that Debevoise-Plimpton earned their $4.5 million. They tried to minimize the legal damage, which we will vigorously contest in federal court next month. And with that opening statement, I'd like to introduce Anne Olivares, one of our attorneys from the law firm of McAllister Olivares. She is an outstanding legal scholar, an advocate for women's rights, and one of the originators of the term sexual harassment many years ago in her initial work in this field. Anne?
Thank you, everyone. So why are we here? Over a number of years, these good people sitting with me here have tried to cure a serious problem of sexual harassment and hostile environment at the University of Rochester. They have been ignored, as they sought to get effective action from administrators. As they raised their concerns, they were retaliated against, their emails searched to use against them. Florian Jaeger was promoted. We have not had time to review the DeBerois report in great detail, which is properly long and complex. Nevertheless, one of the most striking aspects is that it essentially confirms the importance of the work these claimants have done to improve the University of Rochester. As the report says, and I quote, "The concerns brought forward by the complainants are serious ones, going to the heart of the protection of students and the integrity and fairness of the academic environment." It agrees that, and I quote, "Avoiding Jaeger in an academic context caused some female students to miss out on certain educational opportunities." It says that some former female graduate students in BCS had to endure behaviors and inappropriate remarks that they should never have had to at UR or at any educational institution. It accepts that Jaeger acted repeatedly in a way that made women students feel uncomfortable and threatened. It even accepts that had Jaeger acted the way he did in New York City rather than in Rochester, it would have likely been unlawful. It agrees that senior university administrators made repeated mistakes in the way they handled Jaeger and the complaints raised against him. Quote, "In a situation that potentially involves sexual harassment or a hostile work environment directed at women." It makes recommendations for new policies on sexual harassment that mirror exactly those recommended for many months by our plaintiffs. It agrees that the university needs more training on sexual harassment and a fundamentally different approach to handling complaints of sexual harassment and hostile work environment and educational environment, just as these good people have been saying. None of this would have happened except for the persistence and courage of the people around me today. If they had not filed their EEOC complaint and the federal complaint now pending in court, nothing at all would have changed at the University of Rochester. The university hired DeBevoise Plimpton to solve the serious problem created when the EEOC complaint produced widespread condemnation. It is one of the most expensive firms on Wall Street. It is the kind of legal shop a company board calls when it has a crisis it needs cover to solve. But sexual harassment is not DeBevoise's bailiwick. The thrust of their report is to admit that many bad things happened at UR. But miraculously, DeBevoise finds that no legal liability attaches to the university. I know, as a lawyer well practiced in this area, that this is simply wrong as a matter of law and demonstrates not the work of a firm expert in this area or an impartial and independent investigator, but does demonstrate the value the university has received from having paid $4.5 million, as they revealed in their report, to produce this report. In fact, there is substantial case law the report ignores that strongly supports the idea that the university is absolutely liable for the hostile environment created by Jaeger's actions. DeBevoise does not acknowledge these cases and claims the standard for finding legal liability is almost impossibly high. This is simply not true. This is why we have had concerns about the whole process. Mary Jo White of the DeBevoise Plimpton firm has written her own rules to conduct this investigation. The report appears comprehensive, but in fact, it is not. Important factual incidents we relayed are absent or ignored. They don't appear in the report. She has not interviewed many witnesses. She has interviewed a big number, 140, I think she claims, but these are very often peripheral witnesses, not the central actors. Many critical witnesses have been ignored. Their stories haven't been told. But we can't even tell, because her methodology, the protocol that she's used to conduct the investigation, has not been revealed to us. There's no transparency. What witnesses were selected, who was believed, who was ignored, we cannot tell. And our own clients could not participate because They have forced us to be involved in a lawsuit if we're going to achieve justice. Absolutely central players in the whole process are thus absent from her report, which by itself is a fundamental flaw. There are many, many gaps. It is an investigation requested and paid for by the university, fundamentally not objective or comprehensive. It is what you get for $4.5 million when you have a big problem and you need somebody with a big reputation to say they want the money, they'll do the job, but they're not able even to speak to the central people involved in the matter, which are the people here who have spoken to over 100 people themselves. This is why we've always believed that the matter would have to be resolved in the open forum of a courtroom. The new policies recommended by Debevoise will bring the University of Rochester up to the standard of other universities. The new leadership that is coming to the university will be able to implement them. The people sitting here have made all of this possible. Thank you.
If I could say a little bit about who our next presenter is. A little bit of an anecdote. I was interviewed by the University Intercessor a little over a year ago. And I was quizzed about why am I so passionate about these issues. And I said to her, our students in the program that we formed in BCS are like a family. And the perspective that you have on the kinds of things that happened to a member of your family, you know, it is extremely personal. One such student, former student of mine, who is now a professor at the university in brain and cognitive sciences, is Celeste Kidd.
We have a report now that confirms a lot of the things that I've been saying for more than a year, first internally, and when that failed, publicly. The report describes Florian Jaeger in the same terms that I've used. It confirms that he used demeaning and derogatory comments to humiliate women, and that he undermined and humiliated his students. He did those things to me, and he did those things to other women in BCS that I know. The report admits students suffered from his actions. I suffered. More than a dozen of my fellow women also suffered. The report admits that he used drugs, hosted hot tub parties, and that these were important to attend for students to succeed professionally. It admits he sent pictures of his penis to a student and a former student. The report describes that these women said the pictures angered them and made them uncomfortable. The report admits that he blurred professional boundaries with sexual banter and crossing lines. This made me uncomfortable and 15 others. It was unwanted. They admit that people left the lab because of it. The report describes Florian Jaeger as the predator that I know him to be. Despite all this, Mary Jo White took an age-old approach of trying to shame me into silence and obscurity. She released many of my private messages and emails out of context and repeated flat-out inaccuracies about things that I allegedly said. It's a classic and transparent intimidation tactic, and what I want to say tonight is that it won't work. I will not apologize for any of the things that I said as a student trying desperately not to anger a retaliatory sexual predator. It was really hard for me to come forward, and I'm glad that I did. I hope my actions will inspire many other women to do the same. I would like to introduce Keturah Bixby, my co-plaintiff and also a fellow alum of the graduate program in BCS.
I'm Keturah Bixby. I was a graduate student in BCS from 2010 until 2017. I graduated just a few months ago. I've been waiting over 4 years for the University of Rochester to listen to me and take action. I reported Florian's behavior in November 2013, and my report was ignored. Today, Mary Jo White praised me as someone who did a brave thing by coming forward. She writes that we considered it a missed opportunity in 2013 not to have recognized Bixby's complaint, however labeled, as one involving potential sexual harassment. Her praise falls flat. She doesn't really understand me, she never spoke to me, and she doesn't know my firsthand experiences. Mary Jo White made a false statement about me in her press conference this afternoon. She claimed that I spoke to Dick Aslan about my discomfort with Florian's behavior in spring of 2013. I did not. Her report is flawed in this and many other respects. Who I told what when is not the only thing Mary Jo White got wrong. From what I've read of the report, she repeatedly gets my experiences wrong because she never talked to me to find out what I went through. Her report ignores my complaints about the unequal environment, instead focusing on parsing the words I used about exactly how sexual Florian's behavior was to me. That is not acceptable to do to a student who makes a report of harassment. I feel like I was required to be an expert on sexual harassment before my complaint would be heard. Once again, despite a nearly $5 million investigation, my complaint remains unaddressed. This investigation brought no justice for me or any of the other women who made complaints. Thank you.
Our next presenter is Jessica Cantlin, a professor in the Department of Brain and Cognitive Sciences, my former colleague. And I also want to say she exhibited tremendous courage in coming forward and revealing to me information that she had about the events leading up to our complaint. And so Jessica wants to make a statement.
Thanks, Dick. So I just want to comment on how we were retaliated against by the University of Rochester. So, you know, as we claimed and as Mary Jo White's report confirmed, our private emails were taken and they were given to the chair of our department when there was no complaint against us and when we'd done nothing wrong. The emails were, however, critical of the chair and his weak decision-making. Administrators decided to take these emails and hand them out to our colleague, to the chair. As a result of that, the chair became enraged and, you know, in seeing our criticism of his decision-making. And as the Mary Jo White report states, angered by the emails, DeAngelis, our chair, called a BCS faculty meeting for January 10th, 2017. In that meeting, the chair, Greg DeAngelis, attacked me and the other complainants and created a fiction that we were liars. That was false. We were telling the truth about how Florian Jaeger abused students. DeAngelis later admitted in an email to us that he damaged our reputations. Mary Jo White confirms that this action reflected questionable judgment by administrators. And the report further says, the Mary Jo White report further says that reviewing faculty emails is only done rarely at the University of Rochester. Well, the reason that we were subjected to this rare treatment is because we were strong complainants in a sexual harassment case. So this is how they retaliated against us. They attacked our privacy. They attacked our reputations. They made our colleagues angry with us to the point that they would no longer listen to us. And we were unable to work. Our department was hostile, and we were unable to work as faculty in that department. And this was all because we made a sexual harassment complaint, and we stuck with it. You know, so they came after us, and they're coming after us now by paying $4.5 million to a legal defense firm who will attempt to get them off the hook. You know, in my opinion, people don't look at this investigation that finds the University of Rochester innocent and see an unbiased report, because people know the difference between right and wrong, and what Professor Jaeger and the university did is wrong. We've suffered a lot from this over the years. The students have suffered from this. And this very sad investigation and its outcome is only adding to our suffering. It hasn't resolved anything. It hasn't provided any justice or any relief to all of the people who've suffered. And we can't accept that. We can't accept that. And so we'll move forward and we'll take this complaint to a true judge, a real judge in a United States court. Thank you.
Our next presenter is Brad Mahan, also a professor in brain and cognitive sciences.
Thanks, Dick. So one of the conclusions that emerged from the Debevoise Plimpton report and mirrored everything that we've been saying for the past year is that there were systematic failures of process and procedure in how the UR handled their original investigation and its aftermath. The deeper issue here is that the University of Rochester abdicated its responsibility to its most important constituency, its students. It's a failure of moral courage and it's a failure of leadership. And about that, I am deeply sad, and I'm angry, and I am disappointed. Many people have been affected by the structural deficiencies at the University of Rochester. First and foremost, the students who bravely came forward to tell their stories. But because of how the university has handled this matter and its aftermath, in our department, a department of about 15 faculty, 7 faculty have either left or are in the process of leaving. And that includes myself, my wife, Jessica Cantlon. We have 2 beautiful little girls that we were planning to raise here in Rochester. It was not our plan to leave Rochester. We love the city, okay? This also, stepping back, represents the loss of millions of dollars of federal grants to the University of Rochester. It represents the dismantling of established and fruitful research programs. And again, there are further repercussions for the key constituency of the university, its students. 2 of our BCS colleagues, Ben Hayden and Cheryl Heilbrunner, who recently left the University of Rochester, couldn't be here today. During the period when they were considering leaving, we explained to our colleagues in BCS that allowing them to be constructively discharged from the University of Rochester would lead to a domino effect where more and more people would leave our department. And the response that we had in that meeting was, and I quote, "People come and people go," okay? So that's incredibly hurtful to hear something like that from somebody who you otherwise regarded as a friend and as a senior colleague. So I'm terribly sad to be leaving the University of Rochester under these circumstances. I personally have found an incredible community of mentors and colleagues and friends at the University of Rochester Medical Center, where I have an appointment in neurology and neurosurgery. And our research, I think, has been able to positively touch the lives of hundreds of patients over the past several of years. Academic work is the kind of work that you pour your heart into, right? You pour your heart into mentoring your students and building your lab and building collaborations. And so to leave and to come to the decision that you have to leave is, for us, an incredibly painful decision that we had to come to.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Steve Piantodosi, also professor in BCS.
I'd say that this incident was a tragedy for our careers and for the field. BCS was one of the leading departments in the world, and we had the opportunity to work collaboratively on exciting scientific and educational projects to move the field forward in big ways. Our department was an international leader. And because of Florian, the administration, the chair, and the retaliation we have experienced, we've been forced to leave. This department is not going to be the same it was. It's a fiction that the actions by us, people who were supporting the students who came to us, was what caused a rift in the department. The actions by the administration and Florian are what ripped the department and our community apart. In particular, what caused the rift was the rabid defense of Florian's indefensible behavior. The backing of this allegedly independent investigation is fundamentally incoherent, if not fraudulent. Any researcher who tries to write a definitive paper without consulting the primary sources would be laughed out of the academy. In our case, we even have audio recordings which support critical pieces of our story to which Mrs. White had no access. These recordings have yet to be released and will become part of the court record. There's indeed much that will be heard in court that Mrs. White's report doesn't even touch on. That is the tragedy of someone who claims to be able to write a definitive report, an independent report, but who is structurally unable to do so. Knowing that you don't have access to the required primary evidence and still claiming to be the definitive expert while charging top dollar is fundamentally corrupt.
Thank you, Steve. Our next presenter is the former chair of BCS, Alyssa Newport, who is now at Georgetown University.
I spent 24 years at the University of Rochester. I was chair of BCS for 12 years, beginning in its second year after it was formed until 2010 when I stepped down. And so along with the people at this table, I built BCS from a brand new department to a department that when I left was ranked 4th in its field nationally. It wasn't just a great department in terms of its accomplishments in publications. It was also a wonderful department in terms of its collegiality and its spirit in nurturing its students and mentoring them and taking our students from young undergraduates to becoming important scientists in the field. We thought that was part of our job. Florian Jaeger exploited that environment and figured out how to exploit the students who interacted with him socially and the environment that we created. And now I'm sorry to say, I think the department is dead. Half the faculty are leaving. It will not be possible to rebuild the department that we built, except to start over and make it something different. So I'm very sad to lose what I think of as one of our accomplishments, one of our joint accomplishments that we did together. But I think there are a couple of other things I'd like to say as an academic. One is that Debevoise and Plimpton are themselves not academics. They don't come from the academic world. And so, as my colleagues have said, if you look at their report, it's not a very strong report. They said that they filled in for the people that they couldn't talk to by looking at materials, but there are many, many inaccuracies. We don't want to spend our time telling you about all the wrong things they said about us. That's really not mostly the point. Their benchmarking is thin, but you can't read Nearpass's reports and notes, which were highly flawed, as she admitted, and stealing our emails and figure that that makes up for talking to us. As my colleagues have said, we were not able to talk because we're in a lawsuit against the university. So pretending that this is a complete and independent and thorough investigation is just wrong. And she knows that well. Also, along the way, if you look at the written report, you'll see that she took the occasion to trash two of the victims, to say things about them that were not true, to take advantage of their vulnerability at the time that they were victimized by Florian Jaeger. And so no wonder victims don't come forward. She did no service to the victims that have suffered in this experience. So that's one point that I want to make about the character of the report. But the other things I want to say are focused on what was the message that was conveyed by the oral report that she delivered today. I think she made two main points. One is to distinguish sharply between current and past behavior. The past ended in 2014, and miraculously, nothing's happened since then. Of course, in 2016, we discovered what the behaviors were that were going on and filed a complaint. We actually believe that some of these behaviors continue. But I think distinguishing between horrifying behaviors that apparently seem to have taken place continuously until 2014, and then a period of wonderful behavior on the part of Dr. Jaeger from 2014 till the present seems suspicious to me. The other thing I should add, in 2010, I helped University Council to draft new and stronger rules about sexual harassment and faculty-student relations. Unfortunately, I left the university in 2010, and none of them were carried forward until 2014. So many of us have done our best to make things stronger even until the present. The other thing I want to say, and I want to say this quite passionately, Debevoise has made an important distinction in their presentation today between moral and legal responsibility. She said that she found Florian Jaeger's behavior and some of the behavior of the university to be inappropriate, offensive. I've forgotten all of the words that she used, with which I would agree. She then managed to say that no one at the university did anything wrong. Florian Jaeger did nothing wrong. None of the administrators did anything wrong. No one in the Office of Legal Counsel did anything wrong. But here we are in a situation where she says students suffered experiences they should never have had to endure as graduate students. That is not what a university is about. Universities are set up, we are teachers. Our job is to protect and nourish and nurture our students. It is not acceptable to say that people have behaved offensively and inappropriately to our students, but nobody did anything wrong. That is not acceptable. It is not an acceptable conclusion to arrive at. Shame on you. Shame on Debevoise for saying that in their report. And if the University of Rochester thinks that's the right conclusion, shame on the university.
We are now open for at least a brief period of time for Q&A. And I'll moderate, so if you want to raise your hand, and I think we probably need a microphone to pick up on the questioning, or I'll repeat the question. Okay.
My name is Jacqueline Richard. I'm president of Rochester Now. What can we do as people that live in the community that want to reach out or do something to help the situation? I mean, if you're going to court, number one, I think you're going to need money. Am I right?
We won't comment on that.
Okay. So, but what can we do as individuals in the community that support everything you're saying, and our hearts are hurting, and we're concerned about the people going on to schools? You know, what are we going to do? What can we do?
Well, I think you make a really important point about the fact that the University of Rochester is a critical component of the community of Rochester. And it portrays itself as being integral to many, many different aspects of the city of Rochester and Monroe County and the region. I think that if there could be a groundswell of opinion expressed to the University of Rochester administration about what you find wrong with this process or with the procedures that are in place at the university, and the fact that you don't want to be affiliated with an institution that doesn't live up to its ideals. As Alyssa pointed out, it's not just a technical matter of violating some legal parameters in a narrow sense, but rather it's having the moral authority to be a leader of the community. And the University of Rochester certainly portrays itself as one of the kingpins of leadership in this region. And so if you could express your strong opinions about that, I think that would be welcome.
May I build on what Dick is saying? It seems to me that as a citizenry, the most important thing we can do as citizens is to hold people accountable to the right standards, the course of conduct. We see with the Harvey Weinstein cases that it took a long time for voices to be heard. We need to keep our voices heard. This is a rampant problem. Florian Jaeger is not the only case at the University of Rochester. As we have heard, there are a lot of other sexual harassment, sexual assault cases and issues going on right now in the university. We need to make them transparent. We need to make sure that students, people, men and women who have been abused, who have been discriminated against, have a voice and feel that it is perfectly all right. That is the right course, actually, to stand up. They need to be supported and know that that's a good thing. And that's what's been missing, I think, so much in the Me Too discussions. It's been very hard for women to feel they can step forward. Our group of people today heard from Debevoise Plimpton that they haven't been retaliated against. I can tell you, if you're sitting on this side of the table, if this is not retaliation, what they've gone through, then that term doesn't exist in law. If what to label Florian Jaeger as essentially an obnoxious, rude, offensive, inappropriate person for activities over a long period of time is not sexual harassment, then I, as one of the architects of sexual harassment law in the land, what is? you know, then it doesn't exist. It's beyond credibility. We need to call them to task. We need to educate people, have sessions of people, understand what does sexual harassment look like, what is it, why is it so bad, and why is it so hard to identify sometimes, because we have a culture where particularly women are taught to be gracious, not to be confrontational with men, to always give the benefit of the doubt. We need to educate differently. And University of Rochester is an educational institution, so they should be doing in part that job. So hold them to task, require those things. If I may, the university has hired outside counsel, and they now have asked for an extension to file their response to our complaint. We've granted them that extension as a professional courtesy, and so in early February, they'll file their defenses to our complaint, and then the game begins. We rock and roll, and we fight hard, and the cost will start a discovery process where an awful lot of information will be requested, will have to be turned over, and probably a lot more truth will be revealed as that process is undertaken.
So, why do you think the university decided to do the report knowing that you all could not participate? Like, why did you do it?
That is an excellent question, and I couldn't speak to their motives. What I will say is, we've expressed our skepticism with how independent it can be, and how thorough of an investigation it can be, given that the key players can't speak and can't provide their evidence. Seems problematic. It seems like there is an inherent conflict in the setup. I don't trust it to be neutral. I do trust a court to be neutral.
If I could just add another point, I think it's pretty clear that once the EEOC complaint was in the public domain in September, that the university was desperately trying to stop the bleeding. And so by setting up this so-called independent commission, that was their attempt to, you know, stop the exposure that they were getting in the media. And I think that it was partially successful.
If I can also add, I mean, this is what corporations do, and this firm is called in by corporations to clean up a mess. It isn't usually the way universities behave. Universities usually are more academic and think about their role in a different way than many companies, but this is what companies do. They hire an expensive law firm to come and make them look better.
We haven't really, I don't know how many pages the report is, multiple hundreds of pages. We haven't had a chance to read it in detail. Obviously, we'll do that over the next day or two. And mostly we were focusing on what Mary Jo White said in her oral presentation this afternoon.
And of course, on the report, no one has addressed the issue. Today, Debevoise Plimpton admitted that they spent $4.5 million in their legal bills. But of course, we haven't heard about the private investigator costs, other costs that generally attach to investigations like this. Who is paying that? Is it the students' tuitions that are covering this? Are donors paying for it? Is it out of federal funds? And are federal funds allowed to be used for that? I don't think so. So there's a big issue. I'd like to know, all right, where does the money come from for these reports that are there? You know, no institution is going to give a platform to a firm to come in and do an investigation and then set it up so that allegedly nobody sees this report until, you know, Mary Jo makes her presentation. It's a shock to everyone. Nobody knows. What reliable institution that has any fiduciary duty is going to let someone increase their legal exposure? It doesn't make any sense. They're there to try and protect the institution. That's their job, to keep Joel Seligman in post, to prove that they were right. It's the same old. So, you know, I was surprised that, you know, after all that was said and done, that allegedly there's no legal case.
You said that the department's
As of today, we don't know what the mood is for the students because they planned this release for when the students were out of town.
Right.
The rest of us are just coming back to start the spring semester. And I'd say that the mood is pretty dreary among the faculty. I think a lot of us were hoping for the university to finally do the right thing and to finally take responsibility. And it's clear that's not going to happen.
Yes. Well, let me just say something from my own personal perspective. I was continually puzzled, that's a mild way of putting it, about why at every step in this process, when we're working internally within the university's structures, we were getting so much pushback. And it never dawned on me, honestly, that it was at the highest level of the administration. So that surprised me. But when the EEOC complaint became public, President Seligman's performance at the town hall was a rather crystal clear illustration of the fact that it was, at least in part, going to the highest level of the institution. So we all, as Brad had pointed out, love the University of Rochester. We've devoted the majority of our careers, many of us for multiple decades, at the University of Rochester. The harm to the university was not something that we took as satisfaction. But I would have to say that President Seligman's resignation is at least some vindication that what we were doing was right and the response from the university was wrong.
I'd also like to add, to say something positive about my past history with the university and my view of the longer life of the university. This was a university that I also loved. And the previous administration, the previous dean's office, this never would have happened. I do not believe that all of this would have happened in this way. And I've actually spoken to some of the previous administrators and the previous dean. So one can only hope that if something has gone wrong in the view about the ideals and morals of the university that has been confined to this more recent period and that it can return to what it used to be like. A university that I think had great integrity, that had a lot of concern for the individuals in it. I hope that that university survives and returns.
You ask on your question of what can be done. Another thing you might want to do is to, of course, find out the terms of the separation package of Joel Seligman from the university. It'd be very interesting to see what actually he's paid on his departure, and of course, ultimately a Form 990 will have to be filed with the U.S. government to say that. They'll delay that for a period of time, perhaps, but that might be something that you could ask for public accountability. That's what good places do. They share that information. I hope the press is able to get it. Could you speak up? It's hard to hear. Stand up, please. Which would be implementing these things that were suggested.
Where?
On the University campus, we're still working out specifics, but there's a Facebook event.
There's a Facebook event.
Great. Was there a question over here?
But I'm afraid that we'll have to, during discovery, those will be released in court. I'm sorry, we can't discuss them right now.
Can you just say that you have them and that you're going to be discovering them? Using them as discovery? I guess, can you repeat some of your statement earlier as read about the actual recordings?
There are recordings that support our allegations, and those will be released in due course in the legal process. No, they didn't ask for a lot of things that exist. Again, if you don't speak to the central players, you don't know what you're missing.
Would you guys have provided those if they were asked for?
We would not have, no.
They didn't speak to us at all. We had no communications with them. Or I should speak for myself. They never contacted me and never invited me to meet with them, and I could not. And I think that's true of all of us.
Yeah, indeed. They were directed, everyone here was directed by me and my office not to speak. We're in a litigation. It would be malpractice on my part to allow, University of Rochester's investigator to come and speak to everyone. They've had ample opportunity for years. We've been speaking. We've been trying to work with them. We did offer to work with them. We wanted to put procedures and policies in place. We've been offering that all the way through. Our demands have not been great by any means. So we were very serious about that, but they have had no interest in working with us and trying to get to the other side of that.
But interestingly, they actually never asked. I was never asked. I didn't decline. I was never contacted. And I think that's true for all of us.
If they had asked, we would have acknowledged that we have recordings, but we would not have turned them over at that. We will in due course, of course, because we really respect the legal process and system. But they never asked the question, but would have honestly answered, of course, that we have them.
Okay, if there are no further questions, thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much.
I think they're going to want to interview with